Welcome to the FinTech Scaling Show. This podcast is sponsored by Scale Up Consulting, helping FinTech startups create a scalable organization to support an ever-increasing demand. When you're ready to grow, reach out to us at richard@scaleupconsulting.co. Now, over to the show with Richard Doty, founder and host. Hello, FinTech leaders. Super excited to have Toms on the show today. Toms is the founder and CEO of Sum Finance. Toms has had an interesting journey over the last few years. I mean, he's had hyper growth in his company. I mean, we're chatting just before the show, and 2017, there were two people. And all of a sudden, in 2020, back end of 2020, there were 750 people with a revenue turnover of 125 million, 4.3 million customers, and operating in seven countries across the globe. So really, really excited to have you on the show today, mate, and dig down into the detail as to how you went from 2017 with two to 2020 with 750. So welcome today.
Yeah, it's great to be here. Thank you.
Awesome. Okay, so maybe we can jump into it. And what I like to do at the start of the show is just give the listeners a bit of an idea as to, you know, the individual and how they started out before jumping into the detail. And on that point, maybe it would be great to walk through how maybe the early part of your career or even your life, because you are an entrepreneur, helped you sort of succeed over the last few years with Sum Finance.
Yeah, sure. My story here in fintech, right? It goes back to 2009 when I started actually my first real paid job that wasn't an internship. I started in a company that's in the same region and doing the same stuff that we are doing. And I was in this company for 8 years. It's called 4Finance. It actually, at some point, it was the largest online lender in Europe. And I saw a job advertisement for a country manager position for the Latvian business. And at that point in 2009, 4Finance was also, I would say, seed level company. It was a couple of people, just the founders and maybe some employees. It was just kind of starting to do something, right? And they were looking for a country manager for the Latvian business. And at that point, I was 22 and I was still in my university, still in process of graduating, but not yet. And I saw this advertisement. I thought, okay, I'll give it a chance. I don't think that I will be accepted because I had close to zero job experience and just some of my own ideas that I had done during the summer and some internships. But to a big surprise for myself and to others, actually, after a couple of rounds of interviews, I was accepted. And that's how my journey, I would say, both in management and in fintech and in lending started. So I spent in the company 8 years. I learned a lot. I learned what to do and what not to do. I learned what is good and what can I improve definitely if I'm doing something on my own. And I would say, you know, from the perspective of Sum Finance, rest in a sense is history, right? But such experience is definitely, I wouldn't change it for the world, right?
Awesome. And you mentioned the experience and you mentioned what you learned what to do and what not to do. So the what to do, what did you take into Sum Finance and what did you sort of leave behind and make certain that you didn't do or didn't repeat?
Well, kind of 4Finance was a company. And I talk about 4Finance a lot since it definitely has shaped me and it has gave me this experience and definitely has helped to found Sum Finance, right? So, and the story with 4Finance was quite similar, right? It was founded in 2008. It was very small and then super fast it grew, right? And it expanded. And why it expanded, right? Because the company had, the focus was business. So there was business first. It was very lean. So the company was saving money. They were, I would say, I call it spend every euro as it is your last one, right? And even, and of course you do that usually and you bootstrap and you are super early stage, but it's very important to do the same when you're also actually already kind of in the growth phase and a potentially hyper growth phase and already maybe profitable, right? You still need to kind of spend every euro as it is your last and not overspend. And that's definitely what 4Finance did in the beginning. And that's something that I took as a very good thing to Tucson Finance. And here, kind of, we are operating under, I would say, five cornerstones of our business, right? We have five principles how our company operates. And one of those principles is called, kind of, it doesn't matter how profitable the company is or will become, we always save costs, we keep bureaucracy to its minimum, and essentially we call it, as I mentioned, save, kind of spend every euro as it is your last one, right? So I would say that's the key positive takeaway that I took from my 8 years in another venture in the similar industry.
And leaving that venture behind and then sort of moving on, what was the motivation behind setting up Tucson Finance?
I mean, I think in general, when a person kind of have this wish to become an entrepreneur, right? When you have this bug of entrepreneurship, at some point it will come out in a sense, right? And I mean, I had a good life. When I left, I was a regional manager. So I was managing five countries. So I was promoted. I had quite big countries, right? So big business, hundreds of employees under my management. I had bonuses and salaries and all this good stuff, right? Mm. So it was a good life. But honestly, I always have had this entrepreneurship bug. And I thought that at some point, you need to try to scratch it in a sense and see what happens, right? So I thought I'm in a good place in my life. I'm still quite young, so I can start doing something, but I already have some experience. Mm-hmm. So maybe it won't go to shit. Sorry for expression, right?
Expression.
So yeah. So that was, I think, in essence, it was a perfect balance between the youth, energy and experience, and also some money saved, right? So mm-hmm. I thought if I won't do it now, I will never do it. So I left and I started Tucson Finance. And of course, it's a big risk, right? Because you kind of go from safety to uncertainty, right? Mm. But honestly, how I always say, I was sitting by the senior management table, but I always have wanted to sit by the shareholder table, right? And now I do it. So it was a good decision looking back now.
And did you find a gap in the markets? Did you find a problem that you needed to solve? And is that part of also the reason that you went down the Tucson Finance route?
If we look what this industry does in general, right? So it helps underbanked people because depending on the country, but on average, majority of our customers are the ones that are not working with a bank and banks are not offering them any type of loans, right? Mm. But still, those type of people, they also need financing and they have uncertainties and they have things that break down and they have doctors and et cetera, right? Mm. So they also sometimes need extra funding that they don't anticipate in the beginning of the month. So that's the overall, looking from the industry perspective, that's a need that we fulfill, right? Mm. But also, as we all know, and especially in COVID, all the industries are getting more and more digital, right?
Yeah.
So like yesterday, I went to a restaurant and they had the menu that you need to scan a QR code and you pay via Apple Pay. And basically, there's no service in a sense, right? But it's a kind of super fancy restaurant and they're kind of, it's getting... Did I like the experience? That's a different question. Because if I go to a restaurant, maybe I want some human interaction, right? Mm. But on average, on general, what I want to say is that all industries are getting more and more digital, including lending, financials, etc., right? So fintechs are there essentially also to help banks to get more, I would say, get more techie in a sense, right? Because they can't lag behind because they see that there are all these, let's say, what are the best examples? Klarna, right? Already a dinosaur, right?
Yeah.
We have Revolut, kind of. I would say it's not a bank that much as a fintech, right? So it's a and regular banking institutions they need to follow, otherwise they will just disappear quite soon, right? So we are pushing them in a sense. But to answer your question, what is Tucson Finance doing different or better, or where did we see the fit in the market, right? Definitely, we haven't invented particularly anything new, right? We haven't invented a new wheel. So we are not, unfortunately, I can't say that we have done something in that aspect. Mm. But 99% of companies are not doing that, right?
Yeah.
Or 99.99% of companies are not inventing anything new. But why we have succeeded is just we are doing things a bit better than others, right? That's how I can put it. Our processes are a bit better. Our scoring and underwriting is a bit better. we are a bit more motivated as a team here than maybe others are, right? Because I have kind of this core management team that we have been together for all these 4 years, and no one has left, and we're kind of as a very, very tight team, I would say here, right? So we are just, it's a thing that if you are a bit better here and a bit better here, and maybe you save some money there, right? And that all adds up, and that makes this failure versus success, I would say.
Okay, so that's very interesting. I like all 3 points, but I'm going to pick up on one, motivation, in your team motivation. So you got a senior management group or a shareholder group that is responsible for making certain that you push forward on your vision. How do you go ahead and continue that motivation and motivate your employees that also have to obviously pick up the mantle and continue to drive forward?
Definitely. I mean, this is the second of our, I would say, 5 principles of how we do business, right? We call it sharing is caring.
Yeah.
But this caring can be done in many different aspects, in a sense, right? Depending on a team member, depending on the level of the team member, depending on the seniority and at how much time he has spent in the company, right? So we don't allow laziness here in Instant Finance, right? We are not that type of fintech, right? But I would say we are more strict, but generous, and just on average or in general, we are just kind of, if you do your job good, then you will be rewarded, right? It can be different. Of course, most senior management, they are part of our Be a Shareholder program, right? So they are also shareholders, because that's also sharing. And when you make people think that they are not only working for you or for the majority shareholders or whatever, right? But they're also working for themselves. It changes their motivation, right? And it makes them think that they're also entrepreneurs, and they're also working for themselves and for their future, right? I know that in UK and US, these type of Be a Shareholder programs and option programs are very widespread, right? But here, back in Baltics, it's definitely not the case, right? And it's already starting to creep in here. So it's very important, I think, for people to feel that they're also part owners of the business, right? But there are other stuff that we're doing. So we are trying to, of course, but it's all, again, we're not doing anything essentially new, right? All the team events and parties and this and that, we're doing all that stuff that everyone's doing. But the important thing here is that not to overdo it, first of all, and just to make it feel that it's real, right? So that you're not kind of doing it just for kind of to have a tick, because all the other big companies or fintech companies or cool companies are doing. If you make everything from your heart and kind of that people feel that you are kind of you love hanging out with them, or you want to have the beer, right? Then it goes a long way, I would say.
No, I some authenticity in business is always needed. And as you roll forward and you started this venture, and during 2017 it all kicked off, how did you approach that first year in business? What were the things that you wanted to make sure that you nailed, you completed, you got right?
I would say the first year of business, in essence, I would say was most interesting one, right? I went from a fancy office, from a team of hundreds of people, that I managed to start something from zero with my partner Emios, and we call it the IKEA time, right? IKEA time. So again, we bought 2 tables from IKEA, and we were putting them together ourselves. And that's 3 days or a couple of months after I left my big fancy office with not IKEA furniture, right? So it's back to basics, as we call it, right?
Yeah.
But the first year, I would say it's a combination of 2 things. First is just getting the business from the ground. So we launched a couple of first countries. We launched a couple of first our products. But parallel to this kind of day-to-day business stuff, the first year was very crucial in informing this senior management team that we do have here in Sun Finance at this point in time, right? It's a team, I would say, of around 25 people that were recruited in year one. And they're part of this Be a Shareholder program, and they're all still here, right? And I think that not many companies can say that after 4 years, no one of their senior people have left.
Yeah, that's impressive. That's pretty cool. And just diving down into that a bit more, I mean, what were you going through year one, year two, and you sort of starting to build up and get momentum? What capabilities, what business capabilities did you focus on as you scaled and as you grew? Was it, as an example, were you focusing on in the first year marketing and sales, and then the next year's, you know, sort of the process and the engine side of things? Yeah, just what were you guys doing and what were you focusing on?
I can answer this question in I would say in two ways, right? The politically correct answer usually is all the functions are equally important, right? And they are essentially, right?
Yeah. So
because you can like always talk in these kind of these words, like you're only as strong as your weakest link and all this nice stuff, right? But I definitely 100% agree that all the functions are equally important, right? But if we look at from the business perspective and if we look kind of how we can get competitive advantage over our peers and our competitors, I need to circle out, I would say, two aspects, right? One is definitely the tech side of the business. So what stack of tech do you have? How does your core technologies work? Your core systems, how do they work? Can customers go through the process of getting a loan without any hazards and without any delays, right? Is your data safe? Is it stored in several places? All this stuff, right? So that's very important. And that's something that we have been focusing for the whole 4 years. But the second part, and it's equally important, is the underwriting or data science, underwriting, scoring, call it whatever you want, right? So the risk part of the business, as we are lending the business, right? And in Sun Finance, the whole decision process is done fully automatically. So there's no person involvement in there's no employee involvement, direct involvement into customers' approval or decline of the loan, right? So he comes into our website, he registers, he identifies himself, the decision, he's scored and run by our the data science models, etc. And the money, if he's approved, the money is issued to his bank account or credit card or whatnot, right? And all this process is done fully automatically, right? So and this decision process and scoring and underwriting, that's, I would say, is the most crucial part of this whole process, because that allows us, if you do it correctly and if you do it efficiently and if you have the know-how and expertise in this area, then first of all, you can divide the good payers from the bad payers, right? So because we are in the business of getting the money back as well, not only lending, right? And then also to understand how much this good customer actually is able to repay and how much should we actually give him, right? So and this the simple ultimately the decisions are quite straightforward, yes or no, and if yes, how much, right? But the decision engine behind that, right, it's thousands and thousands of data points and tens of different data science models that are run for every application in every product in every country where we operate, right?
Tell me more about that. Tell me more about how you can create an efficient underwriting system that uses, I guess, technology to remove the barriers of manual intervention through, you know, people like ourselves.
Well, first of all, we have developed our own in-house proprietary technology that all our scoring and underwriting is run on, right? So this technology allows us to be super agile. And in the last year, it has been very important to be agile, right? Because world has changed and it's changing on a weekly basis, right? And you need to be adapting also locally in each country, because maybe in some country things are getting better for COVID. In other countries, actually, lockdowns are starting to happen and things are getting worse, right? So you need to adjust your scoring and your approval rates, etc. But again, here, there's no secret sauce. We are doing more or less the same as everyone in the market is doing, right? So you're gathering as much data as possible in each country where you operate. And then you're understanding from that data what data is usable and what data is not usable. So what can predict customers' behavior and what is just pure noise. And then you're trying to take this data and to kind of take the thousands of data points that are usable and put them together in a scorecard, right? That ultimately determines whether the customer will repay or will not repay, or what is the chance of him repaying in a sense, right? So again, here, there's no secret sauce. It's just the matter of how good is your scoring, how good are the people doing that, and how good is actually your local team as well, right? Because many of the data points and many of the inputs come also from the local team. And here I can say that we are also applying our, we call it the 80-20 rule.
Yeah.
It's a bit different than the average 80-20 rule, right? We are saying that 80% of business in each country is the same, right? Because ultimately it's lending, right? The customer registers and he gets a loan. But the 20% are actually the very crucial, because that's the local knowledge, the local expertise, the local people are different in country by country, right? They have different way of habits and way of life, et cetera, et cetera. And here the 20% comes in, where our local teams in each market where we operate, they're giving huge input. And this was a big, this is a big problem, I think, overall in many industries where companies get larger and larger. They forget about this local expertise because they think the HQ is the smartest. We're the best. We know it all, right? What does the country know? They know nothing, right? So if you get larger and larger, they forget about this 20. But for us, it's super important because I was a country manager. I was the 20 at some point and for a long time, right? So I know how crucial it is to listen to the countries. And I know how annoying it is when the group doesn't listen to you, right? When they think that they know best.
And you mentioned this local knowledge that you obviously harness in and you put it into your system and into your algorithm to help you make better decisions and help you give your customers a better view of what's going on. How are you as a business gathering that data? Is it manual? Is it through news feeds? What exactly are you doing in order to get the data, put it into the system, and then obviously at the back end, make certain that the right decisions are made?
I would say 99.99% data is definitely not manual, right? In most of the countries, you have credit bureaus that are operating, right? So if you are a lending company, you can use that data. You have mobile operators that are sharing data in some countries, right? Where it's legal and where it's approved. You can have other types of data. You can have potentially some Facebook data or something. So social data, right? You can have, there are many data that we are gathering that are anti-fraud data, right? AML data. So understanding whether you are kind of, what device are you using and what are you not using? Is this device, has this device been used in other applications, right? Et cetera, et cetera. Yeah. And so this data, the data is there, right? In some countries, there's more data. In some countries, there's less data, right? But in general, you can find this data. And it can be tens of thousands of data points per application. Mm. And the source is to understand which is the most important data and how to use it correctly, I would say.
And as you're going forward and you have this pretty awesome application that pulls in all this data, that uses local knowledge and can go up and down depending on the different circumstances across different regions, how are you then communicating your message to your audiences across the globe, across the areas that you're in, so they understand what you guys bring to the table?
With the audience, you probably mean our kind of customer base.
Yeah, your customer base. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
As we are business to consumer, B2C, right? Business. Yeah. So, and we, at this point, you mentioned 4.3 million registered customers, I think, but that's already, I would say, outdated number. I would say now it's more than 5 million or registered customers across our group, right? Of course, we are using the mass channels to communicate, and it's we have done everything in a sense, right? From TV to radio to outdoors. But of course, majority of our business and majority of our customers are online, right?
Yeah.
So of course, online sources are the essence or the core of our customer acquisition, right? Strategy. So it's because many of our customers, they have a need. They're starting either to look some financing online or something. Of course, Google and other sources are where we are targeting our customers, right? So there's no secret sauce there, I would say. Unfortunately.
Yeah. I'm going to get you to tell us one secret today. That's my aim.
But you know, I have seen in my experience, again, it's here, it's how you manage, again, your kind of your marketing expense in a sense, right?
Yeah.
Because I have seen in my own experience in different companies, several different companies, like Google expense, let's say, right? So they see that on average, one customer, costs €20, for example, right? And the management has said, you can spend €22 per customer, so that's okay, right? And the marketing guy says, okay, but I'm spending 20 on average, it's fine. But when you dig deep and you actually see how does this customer, what's the cost per each, let's say, search phrase, right? Mm. Is actually kind of how this 20 euro combination is kind of how you get to the 20 euros. Actually, maybe there's, I will give you an example, just kind of a corner case, right? Mm. But let's say out of 1,000 customers that you acquired, you get 900 for 2 euros a piece, right? And then 100 you get for a super expensive 200 euros a piece acquisition, right? Mm. On average, it's fine, it's 20. But and they're not looking that, right? But and if you take those 200 away, you suddenly get from 20 euros to 2 euros as an acquisition, right? And this is not maybe that dramatic, but I have seen it time and time in my experience. So again, here is spend every euros that is your last, right? So look at your data and make proper decisions.
Yeah, that's some really sage advice there, completely on the mark. And as, I mean, listen, we started off the show and I said, you're two guys, you're building IKEA desks in 2017. Fast forward to 2020, 750 plus, most probably a bit more right now. You're turning over, as you just mentioned, a bit, in the 5 million region right now. And, you know, I'm wondering, you know, 5 million customers, sorry. And I'm wondering how you have, as a leader, have growing confidence in your ability to, you know, go from two guys to, you know, 750 employees, 5 million customers. How's your confidence built up over time to lead a global team and also a global client base?
I think I had the cold shower management in my early days, right? So yeah. When I started on the age of 22, I started as a manager and I started and I had to manage coming in and in the door, I had to manage, I think it was around 3-4 people, right? From day one, I had zero management experience. I had close to zero work experience, right? And I was 22 and the people who were managing, they were 30 plus, right? So it doesn't sound very good, right? So they're like looking at this young child in a sense and thinking, what is he doing here, right? So definitely, I would say my first years in that age were the hardest and they gave me, and there I gained this experience, how to manage team, how to manage people who are more experienced in a sense and older than you are, right? Because essentially, if you prove yourself, you need to prove yourself. And if you prove yourself, your age doesn't matter. Your seniority doesn't matter, right? The people will start to listen to you, right? They will start to follow you, right? Because leader is the word, of course, again, everyone uses leader, right? But I truly want to be a leader, not a manager or a boss, right? Because leaders lead by example and leaders and people follow leaders. They don't follow managers that much, right? They listen to managers because managers pay them salary, right? But I want my people to be with me and follow me, right? And I can follow them also sometimes when they have better ideas and et cetera, et cetera, right? So when I started for Sun Finance, of course, we were two. But when I left my previous company, I had 300, right? So I had this experience of managing a lot of people. And here, but of course, when you are gathering people from scratch in your own company, it's a different story, right? You feel that they see that it is essentially your baby where they're joining in a sense, right? And when you are here from day one, people kind of view you differently in a sense, right? And if you treat them with respect and as equals, then you stick together for a long time, I would say.
Yeah, some sage words of advice. And listen, as you guys continue to grow, and you obviously are growing at a rapid pace, I mean, what questions are you and your fellow crew of 25 senior managers and throughout the company asking yourselves? So what factors are you considering? So, for example, you know, if we take a look at maybe the pandemic coming down and people actually starting to go out, that could be a factor. Or, you know, if you're in the UK, we always talk about Brexit.
Okay, yes.
Yeah, and then what questions? You could be asking big questions. Should we be going into, you know, different countries? Mm-hmm. Should we be focusing on upgrading our tech?
Yeah.
So what are the things you guys are going through right now?
So I would say there are things that you can affect and there are things that you cannot affect, unfortunately, right?
Yeah.
With the things that you cannot affect, we're not paying that much attention to, right? Because those are things out of our control.
Yeah.
But of course, COVID was a great example. We have built our business here at Sun Finance that it's super agile, it's super lean. I would say this is something that I'm a bit proud of, right? Our cost to income ratio is sub 20% now, right? So we are definitely staying kind of fit in a sense, right? And not getting all the things that we need or want, I don't actually need, right? Yeah. So, and this, we have built the business so that we can adopt into uncertain environments super fast, right? The tech is built in that way. The scorings are built in that way. Our financing is built in that way, right? So that's very important. But going forward, kind of, we call it the matrix growth structure. And we have done it so far, and we are continuing in that path, right? What does it mean? It means that on one axis, we are growing, let's say, vertically with new products in our existing markets, right? So on average, we have now two products, but we want to go up to four products. So we have the instant loan or the single payment loan, and we have a line of credit. But we are actually working and soon launching the buy now, pay later product and also installment loan, right? So essentially, we want to have four different type of products in each of our markets. And then also the horizontally, so on the other axis, it's growing in the markets where we're operating, right? So now we have seven, but we have some in the pipeline, right? So we have some in the early pipeline and maybe a bit later pipeline. And the idea is to have more and more products in each market where we operate, and also to have more and more markets where we operate. And then you have kind of the total business that you have, it grows exponentially in a sense in that aspect, right? So that's what we want to do. And we see that we can do it in this environment that's happening in the world. And within the markets, you can have two types of markets where you enter, right? Yeah. You can have the red ocean markets, so the ones that are full with competition and are established business there. There are some good things and some bad things in those markets, right? And then you can have we call it the bluish markets, ocean markets, where there is something happening there. So you enter, right? But it's still, there's still things to grab. And those are with higher risk, but also higher reward in a sense, right? And we are usually entering in the both because we are not definitely scared of competition and we're not scared of new things. So we have so far done both, and we are also planning to do both in the future.
Awesome. And, you know, I always like to, you know, as we come towards the end of the show, I always like to ask the guests, what book are they reading or what book have they read that they think, you know, the listeners would get value out of as they go through their journey of, you know, scaling their businesses?
I'm not a big book reader, unfortunately. So it's probably not a very popular answer, probably.
Or you can do a podcast or something.
Exactly, but a podcast. But I'm a big podcast listener. Yeah, when I drive in my car, or I go for a run, or I go for a walk with my dogs or something. I listen to podcasts, right?
Yeah.
And the one that I can definitely circle out is some time ago, one friend kind of suggested me Acquired. Probably you know.
Yeah.
So it's quite, now it's, I'm listening it for 3 years now, and they have 8 seasons, and it's amazing, right?
Yeah.
All the companies and all the stories behind it, it's you can get inspiration there, definitely. But also you can get something out that's more material in a sense, right? You can get some insights, you can get some points, you can get also good business ideas, etc. Right. So definitely Acquired. And for someone who hasn't listened, it, there is hundreds of hours of material to listen there, and basically on all the big and interesting companies in the world at the moment.
Oh, awesome. I definitely am also a bit of a fan of that show. It's great to listen to what the guys are doing there. And listen, I mean, as we wrap up today, it's been awesome having a chat with you. I've really enjoyed it. But how can, if anyone wants to get in touch with you or, you know, the guys and girls at Some Finance, what's the easiest way?
We're not big email readers, so I have tried to discourage people to write emails and read emails, right? So we use LinkedIn, WhatsApp, and also our website. But of course, you can drop us an email and someone will try to read it, right? We have our website, sunfinance.group, so you can have there. But if you want to contact me, Facebook, LinkedIn, whatever is preference, right? So as I always say, if you want to do something, you can always achieve in doing that. If you truly want to, right? Also contacting someone.
Awesome. Listen, mate, it's been awesome today. I really enjoyed having a chat with you and looking forward to seeing how you guys scale up over the next few months and obviously over the next few years.
Hopefully, right?
Awesome.
That's the plan. Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you, guys. Thank you.